Donald in the kitchen talks about food. Donald in the kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week at our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we gather here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. Well, we had a bit of Earth Day yesterday. Every 22nd of April, we get together to celebrate the Earth. Who would think we could actually agree on something nowadays? It started March 21st, 1970, actually. And they decided to have a teach-in about the Earth way back in 1970. And here is an interesting...
Teach-in. Oh, yes. Remember the teach-ins, right?
Yeah. And I ran across an article by Bill McKibben, who usually is watching what's happening to climate change now and has a whole list of things.
And has been telling us this for years and years and years and years. God bless him.
But for Earth Day, bless his heart, he put out a bit of news here called Good News and Nothing But One Day Only. He's going to do the happy news here. He wishes us a happy Earth Day. He reminds us that 54 years ago on Earth Day, yesterday, 20 million Americans took to the streets. I don't know where he got those numbers, but that was 10% of the then population. It was a big deal. People responded. I don't know what he means by take to the streets, but it says that 20 million people actually kind of raised their heads and said, oh, what a good idea. And we have been doing it ever since. It's too bad we just say Earth Day is one day. Ooh, but.
Yeah, we need an Earth century at this point.
Yeah, we do. We do. However, keeping up with his theme, Bill McKibben gives us some facts that not everything is gloom and doom, because people are doing things with alternative energy. And there are facts and figures that say that California has now generated more than 100% of its power needs from sun, wind, and hydro for big parts of almost every day this spring. There's a chart and graph here, and watching it along here, producing 148.3% of its power needs from renewables. So they're kind of in the rock and a hard place thing when they've got more.
They have too much.
They have too much. So
they're thinking, okay, either they have to have transmission lines to sell it out of state where people mm-hmm. need it, mm-hmm. or battery storage. So
yeah,
technology must further advance for this one.
And people used to say, well, it doesn't work. But evidently somebody is doing something in.
You got sun.
Yeah, we got sun. There's so much solar on the grid that on sunny spring days when there's not as much demand, electricity prices go negative. Oh my goodness. See, that's an Earth Day sort of thing. So thanks for that little bit of news. I think that's a wonderful thing. Also, here's a little something about solar, and this is most recently, Senator Bernie Sanders helped to push this bill along. There's a Solar for All grants under the Inflation Reduction Act. $7 billion is being signed into law to help not just big companies, but medium and low income people
offset the cost of building, because it's expensive.
It's expensive,
of course.
But this is to help low income Americans save all kinds of bucks for electricity. Solar is now the cheapest form of electricity. So there are some good things that we are doing as a country. Let's kind of continue this Earth Day thought. So, today we're going to consider home economics. Home economics as in the cost of things, our economy, what it costs to get by, and that means people that grow our food, too. What it costs farmers to produce our food, which gets passed on to us, of course. We're going to consider consolidation, monopolies, and big money in our food system. It does affect us, Donna.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I see, you know, when everybody's screaming about inflation, but it looks like, you know, a closer scrutiny of the whole thing, it comes down to that there's some greedy people here sucking all the air out of the room and then passing it on to the consumers. Not that it's that their profit has gone exorbitantly high and they just keep expecting consumers to pay more. It's not like the cost of goods themselves has actually gone up. So it's not really inflation. It's price gouging.
It is. And unfortunately, this gouging happens, or it is helped along by the fact that fewer and fewer big companies are buying up lots of other little companies.
It's called monopolistic behavior.
Right, right. So today we're going to talk about that. I mean, we're not really economists here, but we can go. We can listen.
Yeah, but we know about pocketbooks and prices. And
yes, we do.
What it costs at the grocery store, and it's ouch, ouch, ouch.
Donna and I went to an event in Nevada last Saturday. The Federal Trade Commission had a listening session, heaven forbid, a listening session. They listened to farmers.
And it was Lena Khan, who's the chairman of the Federal Trade Commission, a very bright young woman. I had seen her do some media things, like, I don't know, on late night talk shows and stuff about the economy and this price gouging thing versus it being actual inflation. And she's quite a good spokesperson for this sort of thing. Really, really. So when I heard she was coming to our neighborhood, I said, Lana, we got to be there.
Got to go. So we did. We went. What kind of spurred this, and what one of the main topics was, it was over a proposed purchase of a Iowa fertilizer plant by Koch Industries. K-O-C-H, Koch Industries. You've probably heard that name before. But what is interesting about that, the plant was built with more than half $1 billion of taxpayer support.
It was tax credit.
Yeah, so tax credit.
Iowa taxpayers built this or contributed heavily to having this fertilizer built, the plant built, fairly recently, sometime in the last 10 years. Pardon my lack of facts, but it wasn't like 30 years ago. It was fairly recently. And the purpose of the tax credits at the time were to create competition in the fertilizer price market, right? So within a short number of years, all of a sudden this plant is being sold to the very company that it was built to kind of protect against monopolies. And so there has been an outcry.
There were things that needed to be discussed. There were things that needed to be said. But presently, four corporations, Koch, Nutrien, CF Industries, and Yara USA, control more than 75% of the nitrogen supply. Now, that's a big deal for farmers, because if you're going to grow things on a large scale, it so happens that people add lots of nitrogen to the field, maybe too much, but they have to be competitive, or so we learn.
Well, and the maybe too much question is that this leads to lots of water pollution problems in Iowa. And even the agronomists at ISU have said that we can very easily lower our nitrate application rates. It's actually the companies selling the nitrogen that are pushing farmers, oh, you need to add more, you need to add more. So we are kind of in an oversaturated point with the nitrogen. So Farmers Union held this listening session, and they got Lena Khan to come out. So two things. She started off with this wonderful quote, capitalism without competition is exploitation. So she didn't speak a lot. The other thing she did say to the farmers is she reminded them all that she's there to listen to what the complaints are. However, The FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, which regulates monopolies, can only file lawsuits, and that these things are then decided in the courts. It's not like she can go in and say, oh yeah, this is a monopoly. She can construct the lawsuit and, you know, start all of that in motion, but she's not the end product there. So, she was very, very, she was adorable. Sorry, she really, really was.
You don't usually say that about politicians.
No, she was really kind and attentive, and you could feel she was really, really listening. And the farmers' presentations were, we of course have a lot of very well-spoken farmers. I mean, these guys are, they're, you know, every farmer is an entrepreneurial businessman, and so he can speak to his own interests, and that indeed did happen. It was a delightful.
An eye-opening thing, too.
Yeah.
Talk about prices. Prices.
Oh, the main thing that they emphasize, and this is where the FTC can hear, multiple farmers talked about when the price of corn goes up, which is the opportunity for the farmers to, like, make a little bit more to kind of offset the years when it's not so high. But they said every time the prices spike for corn and soybeans, the price of fertilizer goes up, and that it is not related. It's related to the price of the corn, which means they're price fixing in the market, and it's not related to the price of their input materials. So this is what we were, you know, Lena Khan has been talking about. It's not inflation. It's actually price control and gouging.
Right. She mentioned besides price control and it's antitrust stuff. It's busting up monopolies. Other things that the FTC and her folks are, well, they're supposed to watch this stuff.
That's their job, the Federal Trade Commission.
Yeah, they are currently involved in this pesticide monopolies thing. But there's also, although we didn't get around to talking about it, there was the right to repair bill.
That was another one, right, where the manufacturers like John Deere could sell you a tractor, but you didn't have the right to repair it yourself. You had to go back to them if you needed something. And farmers who have been fixing tractors and before that horses and wagons and buggies for a long time, did not go down well with farmers for good reason.
Well, it just kind of rubs everybody the wrong way.
Well, Levon Gifun got up there and she said, so she's, you know, her husband are farming and they're multi-generation Iowa farmers, kind of south of Ames. And her sons are farming with her husband. She said last year they had to buy new tire tractors. And she said those tractors cost...
Tires.
Tires. Just the tires for the tractor, which who knows how much the tractor costs. The tires were $20,000. And then she quoted in some bygone era when her parents were able to buy something like 80 acres for $20,000. I mean, this is like unbelievable inflation. So she was just talking about for her sons who are, you know, the next generation in their family business, these kinds of cash in that operating expenses, that's pretty extreme.
And tires are just one thing that that farmers have to buy. I know tractor tires are...
They're big, but, they're you big. Know, that's pretty... Yeah. That's really big, $20,000 worth
well,
of...
Think of the size of those tractors.
Yeah.
My goodness.
And the big ones are... The big tires, there's only two big ones, right?
Well, no. Some of them got, like, four on the back.
I know? Oh,
well,
dear.
Yeah. I mean, I have a very small tractor, and I was like, it's a couple $100 for a tire for my little tractor. And, well, yeah, I can imagine it'd be that much. But that's just the tires. The right to repair things is, I don't know, that should be in the Constitution of the United States. And says, it, yeah. It's good. Another thing she mentioned, and we didn't really. Another thing that her department and the
Lena Khan,
Lena Khan mentioned is they're really working and to manage the labeling situation for meat products and people.
That's a recent victory that we're actually going to do a show about the. Country of origin labeling has recently had a change that will go into effect in 2026, whereas in to say, you know, that the cow or other animal is an American product, it has to be born in the USA, processed in the USA, and then, you know, packaged and put to, currently, if you buy, for example, something that says grass-fed beef, it can say American grass-fed beef, where, and the cow can have actually been grown in Australia, for example.
Ha!
So that has been a difficult, because in Australia, they have a lot of grazing land. That's just an example. Same is true for New Zealand. So it's cheaper, even with the shipping, to bring those animals in. And that's been an unfair advantage for American grazers. So we'll do a whole show on grass-fed beef coming
up. Right, but this is about buying inputs and the fact that things get purchased or companies get taken over by big companies. And you'd think the Koch brothers and others would have enough on their plate, but I guess it's an easy way for them to make money, but it puts farmers in a really hard place.
Well, and the whole American economy, frankly, this is not just in the food system. We've had 50 years of laxity under the government regulations, you know, of starting with Reagan and going forward, lack of monopoly enforcement. So time to turn the tables again, right? Remember, capitalism without competition is exploitation. And the middle classes and the all but the wealthy are being exploited at the moment with these growing monopolies. So.
Yeah. It was well attended. There were about 100 people there, and it was in, this event was held in Nevada, Iowa, kind of the center of the state, which was handy. And it was at gatherings, which is right next to a coffee shop, but it's an event venue run by Evie Peterson, who we talked to before. She has you could have weddings there and whatever. It was a really nice place for a gathering.
Right, just the right size.
Yeah, it was good. So I'm glad we went, and we heard a lot of different opinions. Not all farmers agree on things, but they do agree that prices are rising suspiciously much too
fast. All the farmers are agreeing that too much of the food dollar is going not even to the grocery stores, and certainly not to the farmers, but to the middle, the buyers and processors of food and ethanol. Right. Farmers pretty much agree on that one.
Right. There was an interesting, people could have 3 minutes to talk, and lots of people lined up to talk on the microphone. There was some people said, well, this is not good at all, but this nice Iowa farmer did say in the course of things that the Koch brothers, at least, well, on paper, are an American company, as opposed to selling the fertilizer plant
I have not researched this, but according to the conversation at the event, apparently an Egyptian company has also bid on it. Now, it can't be that our only choices in Iowa are to sell this publicly funded, to some extent, entity can either go to the Koch brothers or to the Egyptians. There got to be some other options here.
Well, and I, as a taxpayer, you wonder, why did we get all this money to get this company off the ground so somebody else could buy it?
Let's do some crowdfunding and we'll buy it ourselves, right?
Oh, I've always wanted to own a fertilizer. So I know nothing about fertilizer at all, but we could do that. We could even have a bake sale. There you go.
There we go.
Good. Anyway, 3 cheers for the Iowa Farmers Union and all the folks that put on this event, because a lot of people got to speak. And somehow I get the idea that Lisa Kuhn was listening, or maybe somebody was taking some good notes. I hope this kind of
Lena Kahn. Lena Kahn.
Lena Kahn. Yeah. Not Lisa. Yeah. Lena Kahn. Okay. Anyway, that's good.
Right. So The Federal Trade Commission came to Iowa and listened.
And we told them.
And now we'll see what happens.
We did. We did.
We did our best.
Good. Well, I have a another news item. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick. From the Dadalana Kitchen News Department. That was a ticker tape there. And actually, this is more information from Bill McKibben. His good news for Earth Day, which was yesterday. There is something happening with the Native American people in Minnesota. The Sioux Nation in Minnesota is developing a world-leading business, creating something called hempcrete, a building material with a whole lot of hemp in it. I don't know what else is in it, but
cellulose,
And evidently they are going great guns. It doesn't have a lot of bad environmental.
That's true, because concrete is one of the biggest carbon, making concrete or something emits a lot of carbon or something. It's a big bugaboo for us.
Yes. This tribe, the Lower Sioux Building Company, opened in April, and now they're starting to be a good part of the green building movement. They started because on their reservation, where a lot of them lived, they realized they were short of at least 150 houses on the reservation, and they looked around, and what do we have to build with? And this sounds like a really good possibility. So that was some good news.
Yeah, and we can grow hemp. We could easily grow some hemp instead of so much corn and soybeans.
I think so. We need buildings,
and this is not the kind of hemp that you have to smoke. Hemp has been used for ropes and as fiber for thousands of years.
Right, right. So that's another good thing. People are being innovative, and that's a good thing.
Well, giddy up on that innovation there.
We'll do that. So, this is KHOI, and you're listening to the Dadalana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Dadalana Kitchen. We're talking about monopolies today. Not the game. No.
It's a game for the billionaires. But.
Right, right. But so much of business in this country and around the world is consolidating, monopolizing, and we're kind of considering big money when it
bigger
has to do
and
with
bigger
our food
and bigger,
system.
Yeah.
Bigger and bigger.
So, people are talking about the robber barons these days, like they did with the Rockefellers and the Gettys and, you know.
It happened before.
Gilded Age, here we are.
Yeah, and remember, people kind
of
thought
that. Well, and that's based on economic statistics that we have the difference between the very wealthy now and how much money they make and the rest of us has gotten really, really extreme. That's what makes this similar now to what we had in the Gilded Age.
And folks that know about this sort of thing remind us that inequality leads to really unstable
nations. Yep, inequality makes instability.
That's not good. That's not good. So a young author from Iowa has been getting a lot of attention lately. His name is Austin Frerich, and he wrote a book called Barons, as in robber barons. Barons, money, power, and the corruption of the American food industry.
Right. So Austin, he's an expert on agricultural and antitrust policy. He worked at the Open Market Institutes, the U.S. Department of the Treasury, and the Congressional Research Service before becoming a fellow at Yale University. The better news is that he is a seventh-generation Iowan. So he grew up with all of these things that all of us in the Midwest have seen. And reading the book, of course, he's young. Thank goodness there's another generation picking this up. Reading the book, there were not things that I did not know in there, but it was wonderful to see a sort of a historical summation of the last 50 to 75 years in kind of farming and international trade, all the food policies and things that have gone on and, you know, over the span of my lifetime. I kept going, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no, you know, and it just kept building up and we got used to it and this is the status quo and stuff. So now Austin has written a book where this is all history. And it's a very cogent piece of history, and it's recent history, which is often hard for people to see. Yes. Because, you know, it's like it's every day in the newspaper and then it adds up in 20 years, 30 years, and now it becomes the status quo and everybody think it's reality the way it's always been. No, that's not true. So read this book as a recent history lesson. It's very well done. It's very clear. He's a good researcher and wow.
Yeah, very good. Well, recently, back in early April, Iowa Citizens for Community Involvement sponsored a talk by Austin Frerich at the Ames Public Library.
He's really been on a big book tour. This book has gotten a lot of attention, and nationally also. We should be very proud of him. He's doing an excellent job. And I'm glad there's some younger people with the energy to do all this, right?
So let's listen to a little bit of what Austin Frerich has to say about our monopolized food system.
I gotta tell you how this whole book came about, because it's so funny. It's have you guys heard of Carl's Place in Des Moines? It's like a dive bar.
Okay. Yeah.
This was in the summer of 2018. Remember that big governor's race between Fred Hubble and Kim Reynolds? Yeah. Well, I didn't know at the time. We don't have campaign contribution limits on state races in Iowa. So this political person was telling me how this hog farmer gave Kim Reynolds $300,000 for her campaign. And not only that you know where up by Jordan Creek where the Super Target is? There's the only gated community in Iowa is right there. So that's where he lives. But he also lives down in Naples, Florida, and flies back and forth between on his private jet with the words allegedly on his jet when pigs fly. And to me, I was like, oh, first of all, this is incredible copy. But also, what a powerful symbol of what's happened. The largest political player in Iowa now is a hog baron. So, but as I did this research, this is a little bit of a tangent. It's a weird thing to say. It all goes back to chicken. So, 100 years ago, when we tackled the meat monopolies after the jungle, all that kind of stuff, we wrote all these regulations to protect workers, farmers, what have you. But we didn't write chicken into the regulations. Because there was no commercial chicken operations. You just had a chicken in your backyard, and you killed it, and you ate it. So what happened down south was these corporations took that model of sharecropping that was incredibly exploited to black farmers and applied it to chicken production. So if you're a chicken farmer, you're given the bird, you're given the feed, you're told what to do, you take on a lot of debt to build a certain facility to their specifications, you basically babysit the bird, you sell it back to the company, and it's weighed in a room you cannot see. You're paid on a tournament system. Whoever adds the most weight gets paid the most. Whoever adds the least gets paid the least. So if I don't like you, you're lippy. I give you the runt. You're not covering your costs. You go bankrupt. It's an old stat that like 70% of chicken farmers live in poverty. Here's the thing. So when you do that production model, you're going to get a lot of market share. And the undercurrent of my book is the failure of USA to step in and stop a race to the bottom. They could have made chicken behave like the other meats. But instead, what happened is pork, all the other meats started behaving like chicken. They call it chickenization. So what we saw in the 80s in eastern North Carolina was literally a state senator deregulated it to allow chicken production. Hogs would be produced like chickens, and he gobbled up a bunch of market share. If you heard of Murphy Brown, that's what Murphy Brown comes out of. But to me, it's the best example of structural racism in the food system, because they did it in the poor black areas. And the way the water table is in North Carolina and Iowa, we inject it into the soil. Down there, they have to spray it. So in these poor black areas, all these church steeples have to be repainted every few years because they turn brown. Here's the thing. Again, USDA could have stepped in and said, don't do that. But no, it allowed a race to the bottom. And what I realized researching was, in the early 90s, the Business Elite of Des Moines were put together a study, paid some DC expert to say, we can't lose our number one status in pigs. What are we going to do? And they straight up said, let's not forego the family farmer. We have, because it's all about selling as much seed as possible and butchering as many hogs as possible. So my hog baron, he started building these confinements. And so he was just the right person at the right time. He got Wall Street money, and he was able to scale up real quick. And you saw this rural rebellion. And the undercurrent of my book, too, is kind of a... You see my mom's, like, New Deal Catholicism come out of me sometimes, and my anger at Vilsack. Because, like, I really liked Vilsack growing up. I thought Vision Iowa was an incredible program. But, like, remember the 2002 governor's race in Iowa? A big part of it was opposition to confinements. He was running against Doug Gross, who at the time was the head lobbyist for my hog baron. And the way Iowa works is only the governor of Iowa can stop the construction of these confinements. Well, guess what? After Vilsack won, he oversaw the largest expansion of confinements in Iowa history. I mean, that just breaks democracy, breaks people's hope in government, is when someone says they're there to help you and they stab you in the back, you know. But you just see this kind of corporate capture take hold, and all these corners being cut. I mean, DNR's been gutted. I mean, it's an open secret now. If you build a hog confinement, 2,499, you're under a different regulatory structure. They put 4,000 hogs in it. No one's checking. I just had water people tell me, you can just tell by the pollution coming off the fields that there's way more hogs here than, you know, is allowed. But after I put this article out there, I realized is what we're seeing in hogs, we see it across the food system. And so, for me, I love using these robber baron things to tell these bigger stories. This isn't like a lifestyle of the rich and famous kind of book. It's more of, I want to tell you about structures. Like, Cargill's my grain baron, but that's really about the farm bill. And actually, Driscoll's is my favorite little cocktail chatter, because Driscoll sells 1 in 3 berries, but they don't grow a single berry. They took that chicken model and applied it to berry production. So they own the IP of the berry. They have it now produced in offshore. Like, Baja California is a big area. So that way, you know, some contract grower, you know, they hire 12-year-olds. Driscoll's can be like, we didn't know.
Yeah.
I mean, they're modern-day plantations. I mean, it's aggressive rhetoric to use. But it's when these supply chains get so long, transparency collapses. But also keep in mind, it undermines people doing it right. And also it undermines farm workers here. People that organize, how can you compete against the labor of 12-year-olds being exploited? And you know what's so weird about that is I realized, growing up, all the apple orchards in Linn County disappeared. And it wasn't like they became subdivisions. It just became corn. And you just realize the farm bill now we have is designed for everyone, but it's only designed for corporate America. I call it the Wall Street Farm Bill. It's not designed for farmers. By every metric, it's failed everybody. It's designed to overproduce grains at the cost of everything else. So that's why it takes money now in America to eat healthy. And I actually think what's really interesting, too, why this book is connecting with different audiences is what's going on in the grocery store. I mean, industry, Farm Bureau will always say, cheap food, cheap food. That's just not factually correct. I mean, first of all, the Iowa Farm Bureau is really just an insurance company. They have two corporate jets. I have little trackers on them, so it's always fun when they take off for Arizona or, like, Puerto Rico. It's dollar for dollar. Most Western democracies spend less on food than we do. And Italians were about equal. And just one last quick story is, do you guys watch America's Test Kitchen? Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you this story because... I did an interview with a guy with a little bow tie, you know? It was in Urbandale. I thought it was going to go on and be like a nice, fluffy 15-minute interview. We got at it. First of all, he argued over cheap food. So this is a good example. This is a nerdy moment. How you can look at some part, you can look at the same data set, have different interpretations. I focus on per capita expenditure in food. He focuses on percent of income, a median income. And so if you do that, America is, okay, it's cheaper food compared to other democracies, but we're still unequal. Mm-hmm. Our society's done this. And so you can't use a median when society's like this, especially when you're trying to figure out what the lower incomes are paying on food. So we got into it, but then we got into it, who do you blame? He's like poor people don't know how to cook. It's their own fault they're eating crap.
Oh,
and I did not expect this conversation. And it's also like, I don't want to come off as angry. Like I'm mad and I'm sad, but I'm not. I don't want to be angry. And so that to me is like, oh, he doesn't hang out in the Burlingtons of America. He doesn't know what it's like to barely get by. And no, you don't have a lot of time to cook. And also, like, be fair. First of all, this food's also engineered to be addicting. Who can have one cheese and not have that? So that's the way. So everyone, and also keep in mind, when markets are concentrated, they gouge. I mean, the goal of a corporate executive is monopoly. That's where profits are. So you're going to have this tension. So as our food markets have gotten incredibly concentrated, it's a natural outcome that you're being gouged. I mean, if I could include one graph in my book, it would be the beef markets. Beef prices have done this, and the beef markets have done... I mean, what cattle ranchers get is this. It's like the best example of monopoly capture of money.
Okay.
Oh, and the last thing before Evan and I talk is, never forget, everything you eat is subsidized. The question is to what degree. We have chosen to subsidize Cheez-Its. I love Cheez-Its. Cheez-Its and Diet Mountain Dew are like my crack. I was also told by a friend, like, Diet Mountain Dew is like a very Iowa pop.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But we can choose a different system. And, like, truly, my vision, and this is, like, over the top, I don't mean to sound over the top, but, like, Iowa should be Italy of North America. This is the world's best soil. A lot of these towns in Iowa are beautiful. Like, they have these beautiful brick cores. Like, I lived in Winterset for a while, and, like, I literally had this, like, $600 lovely brick apartment. I could walk down to the farmer's market. I could walk across the square to go see Coco. That's what a lot of people like. It's, like, that kind of thing. And also, keep in mind, a lot of people are doing the right thing already. Practical Farmers of Iowa is one of the coolest groups out there. And it's just really just a few greedy people holding us back. And when you talk about the food system, you're really talking about 1 in 10 people that work in it. And so we can choose something different. And that to me is the hope of... It's funny, writing this book, I didn't mention ethanol. I'm just done talking about ethanol. Mm. I put it in at the end, but I put 3 sentences. Ethanol's a farce. The Museum of Failure included it in it. And anyone that's... The conversation over for climate change is over. It's just like there's just no... The fact that people want to say we put in airplanes and call it good for the climate, it's just like... Just laughing. Like, you're a flat earther at that point. Mm-hmm. It's just... And there's a whole thing going on, too, where, like, as we privatize higher ed, corporate dollars have filled the void. And that's how you get this corrupted conversation. And so... That means as ethanol dies, is putting animals back on the land. It's because these rural communities thrive when we had a thriving middle class farm system. My mom's like one Irish Catholic, she's like 1 in 12. I have 40 some cousins, and the amount of Iowa people came up to me and said, "Your pork tastes so good," was hilarious because like when Piggy runs around outside and does Piggy things, has a diverse diet, it's going to taste better than pig that stands all day in a metal shed and eats corn.
That was a lecture, part of a lecture, by Austin Frerich, the author of Barons, Money, Power, and Corruption of the American Food Industry. It's a new book, and we've read the book, and we've had a good time discussing it. We'll take a little break here and come back and talk about it some more. This is KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about this radio station and our show at www.khoifm.org. Welcome back to the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about big money and consolidation in our food system. And we're talking about a book written by Austin Frerich about money, power, and corruption in the American food industry. You'd think it'd be kind of a boring book to read for somebody like me who usually goes for science fiction and romantic history things. But no, this was it's written very well, and it's his chapters are laid out in a really interesting way. Chapter 1, the hog barons. He talks about Iowa Select Farms. Chapter 2, the grain barons, Cargill. And
these are just examples he uses.
Examples.
Right.
And he follows not just Cargill, but what that means in government and in the farm bill. Chapter 3, the coffee barons. He follows a company called JAB Holding Company and the illusion of choice that we have about what we buy. Chapter 4, the dairy barons. And he highlights a dairy called Fairlife Dairy.
From Indiana.
In Indiana. And there's interesting things there, too. Especially, remember the ad campaigns to get us to eat pork, to drink milk? And that all comes to us from checkoffs. Checkoffs are an interesting part of the production business. And farmers pay to get their...
Right. Every farmer selling anything has to pay into their checkoff, like the pork producers or the corn growers. And this money, and of course, the bigger farmers pay in more and end up having control over these things. So it was meant as a marketing kind of PR.
Yeah, it's a good idea, but it has grown and grown. Where our checkoff money goes is kind of interesting, and it's good to know these things. That was chapter 4. Chapter 5, the berry barons. Driscoll Berries. Talk about an international bunch of conglomerates that give us strawberries all year round. And like you heard Austin talking about in his library lecture there, Driscoll itself doesn't grow any berries. It consolidates.
He gets into labor issues.
Labor issues. And chapter 6, the slaughter barons. Lots of things
More
labor issues. Chapter 7, the grocery barons. If you want to find out about Walmart, who didn't used to be a grocery store, but my goodness, they have grown, and it's an American...
He brings it down to Amazon and Walmart. You know, I mean, we're not talking about our lovely little Hy-Vees or our Fairways. It's Amazon and Walmart.
Yep. One-third of grocery dollars in the U.S. goes to Walmart currently. That's interesting. Okay, but Chapter 8, he actually has some good suggestions for what we can do to
right. This is the closing chapter in his book, and I'm going to give a quote from Chris Jones here. So last year, about a year ago, we had another Iowa writer who wrote a fabulous book called Swine Nation, and he is a water quality engineer, and he was talking about, you know, the high nitrate levels and other polluting things in our water system. And so his book has been well read around the state, and so he does these, you know, he goes around talking about these things, and so he writes also, and this is a little quote from his experience about covering these issues. He said, this is from Chris Jones, Swine Nation, while talking about these issues, ethanol must die, we need more parks, regulate agriculture, etc., audience heads eagerly nod up and down like a kindergarten class at a yo-yo demonstration. But I've had to listen more than once afterward to an elected official or somebody from the donor class tell me that I need to tone down my rhetoric or that my ideals are unrealistic or some other cowardly BS that makes me wonder what the hell is going on. So I'm going to read a little bit also from Austin's book where he has suggestions, you know, like Chris's of, you know, getting rid of ethanol and stuff. So Austin talks about the Wall Street Farm Bill, as you heard in his lecture, and he said it is time to sunset the Farm Bill as we know it. We need to retire checkoffs which Lana and I just talked about, which gives a lot of kind of a slush fund for promoting the interests of big ag, basically. And he also mentions we need to put animals back on the land and aggressively phase out industrial animal operations. This is certainly something Chris Jones is on about also. He then goes on to, we need to push for a reform-minded Secretary of Agriculture who is deeply committed to addressing these issues and who will breathe new life into the agency. Congress should also consider transferring some of the USDA's responsibilities to other government agencies, such as having the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services oversee the nutritional assistance programs. Really good idea. And then he also mentions, of course, workers should be fairly paid. Another big issue. Now, these are big, you know, and as Chris Jones says, just voting every couple of years is not going to change this. These are big structural changes in government, and the egregious things have come from both parties. I must say, this is not just the Democrats or the Republicans doing this. It's time to rethink business and the way the business of the government is run, needs to be rethought. And these are not radical ideas. These are sensible ideas, but they're big deals. And as we all know, people who have money and power never willingly just give it up. Oh, all those checkoff people. Yeah, let's retire. Let's give up this whole thing. There's some fighting that we need to do. So this book, Barrens, is a really good little roadmap for that, as was Chris Jones's Swine Nation. And I'm glad these two Iowa writers are out there really saying some very sensible things. So,
yes.
And Iowa, as Lon and I always say, we're in the middle of all of it here in Iowa, right? Right in the middle of the country.
It's amazing. Money is talking a lot louder than us citizens here. And with the climate concerns that we have and the environmental concerns that we have.
The pollution concerns, yeah.
Yeah, it's time we kind of back up a little bit. Yeah,
let me remind you this dire thing. We have just recently had this statistic in Iowa that Iowa has the fastest growing cancer rate in the nation. Okay, folks, do we have to start counting the dead bodies before we do anything about this?
This is not good. So I want to get back to this checkoff money. You'd think, well, the eat pork and drink milk campaigns, so they're harmless. But there seems to be a whole lot of money in that fund. And also out of that kind of money come think tanks and supposed specialists that the government looks to for facts and figures about cancer in Iowa and how polluted is our streams. So unfortunately, they don't get information from a university or independent lab.
Well, sometimes they do get some of their information, but the checkoff dollars are used to write lobbying campaigns that are pro that industry, whichever industry it is, and not necessarily they are people who train to write to often debunk critical science. So this money doesn't just make little campaigns with milk mustaches.
No.
It also influences politicians and other more nefarious things.
Right. And all of this is all big business. It affects who employs us and also how much money we get to buy things. The idea of having a equitable playing field, not just for the owners of big companies, but for the workers. That's really, really important. There's some in the foreword of the book, Barrens, Money, Power, and the Corruption in American Food Industry. Adam Smith is quoted, and he's really quoted. Yes, he is. Adam Smith.
Does it give a date on that, 100 years ago or something? Who knows?
No, way back. His most influential book, Adam Smith, was The Wealth of Nations, written in 1776.
Ah, there we go.
So here's this guy kind of looking forward to this new this new nation that was coming up, and he kind of recognized monopolies. At the time, there was the Dutch East India Trading Company that was kind of raising things like, you know,
among others, yes.
Little things like slavery, and that's an economic issue, too, or it was at the time. And he was worried about the predatory behavior of big companies like they were in his day, and he said big corporations would always try to limit competition, gain excessive profits, and levy for their own benefit, and observe and put tax upon the rest of their fellow citizens. Any new laws or government regulations proposed by merchants and manufacturers should be regarded with suspicion and never adopted without careful scrutiny. Smith argued unchecked market power was an antithetical to individual rights in a system of natural liberty.
Very similar. Human nature doesn't change that much. So
we're dealing with money and power, big stuff at the top. The rest of us at the bottom, we should be aware of what's going on. Yes, we should. So that book was called Barron's Money, Power, and the Corruption of the American Food Industry. Yeah.
And the other book is Chris Jones' Swine Nation. Both of them are excellent reads by Iowa-born writers.
Very good. Very good. Well, we have some upcomings here on the Donna Lana Kitchen. Besides figuring out about where all our food is coming from, here's another place our food can be coming from. Here's a call to gardeners. It's that season. This coming Saturday, the 27th of April, at the Ames Public Library, the Ames Seed Library, a place to swap and gather and, well, in a sense, check out seeds, is going to be at the Ames Public Library, 515 Douglas Avenue, Saturday, April 27th, from 10 to 4, and there'll be some speakers on gardening. And that is in conjunction with the Ames Repair Cafe. Remember we talked earlier about the right to repair? You might...
We'll be busy busting the seed monopolies and having free repairs and, you know, exchanging community information.
We have the right to repair our stuff, so... Think about your garden. Think about repairing things. Saturday, April 27th at the library.
Spring fix-it time.
10 to 4. 10 to 4. And also, Donna reminded me it's rhubarb season.
It's rhubarb season. Here we go.
It's time. It's just kind of coming up. Although I noticed in town the rhubarb is a lot taller than it is out in the country. But that's okay. Very good. Also, this weekend, Saturday evening at 7 o'clock, is a Central Iowa Barn Dance at 130 South Sheldon in Ames. Come to the West Door.
Called by none other than Lana Nautical.
And with music by the Barn Owl Band, it's always a good time. And come out and celebrate spring. Donna, tell folks about our podcast.
Yes, the radio content is also a podcast, which can be listened to anywhere that you listen to podcasts, on any device that you listen to podcasts. Just put in Donna Lana, that's one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, Kitchen, and you will find us in your ears.
Good. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, music by the Barn Owl Band. Support this fine radio station. And thanks for joining us today. My name is Lana Nautical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. We'll go out with Over the Waterfall by the Barn Owl Band. Eat good food and enjoy life.